This sentence of the master expressed in one of his letters to Dr. K.C.V. on 26th July 1968 is of great spiritual significance. I shall quote the context in which this was made. I also frankly express today, kindly note frankly, that I have been transmitting South India every time for the last 10 years. The results are good, but not according to my labor. The case may be that they are mostly dogmatic instead of godmatic. To be more plain, I should say that they have in mind the value of the grosser type of worship, and one link is attached to God and the other to the devil. Thus they take milk, but also take pickle after it. It's our common observation that after a good meditation, there are some who would like to hear their voices, having already, perhaps, exhausted hearing the voice of the Master in the heart. The time to dwell on the thoughts that arose during meditation and one's orientation to Master is swiftly given up to the meaningless chatter of their mind. Though the Master's words of God and devil in this context may appear odd, if we take the words in a broader sense, it would mean the replacement of the opposites. I was accustomed to the custom of eating food followed by some good delicious sweet dish, and in the end eat something that is peppery and hot. That is the way the majority of South Indian festival eating is. A Muslim senior officer came to visit us when I was working at Vizag. As usual, the practice of eating sweet dish was completed. Then, when we were about to serve him something peppery, he exclaimed, "Why we are taking away the sweetness in his mouth?" That is the first time I started reflecting on this practice. And ever since, I have the habit of ending the dinner or lunch with the sweet dish only. We need to retain the sweetness instead of losing it too soon. But sweetness also is repulsive when it is beyond the limits. Perhaps that is a problem. Master, however, says it differently. We seem to have developed a taste for the peppery that we prefer to mix it with sweet. The adherence to the rituals and idols somehow is of the form of addiction, and the concepts of infinity and immortality get confused in our minds. We can experience infinity during meditation, but immortality, which some crave for, however, is not a product of meditation. It is to be noted that infinity is the continuity of existence, and immortality is the continuity of consciousness. Instead of realizing that the immortality sought after can only be in the realm of consciousness, when our idea of body self and its boundary is crossed, we tend to think that somehow the body self will continue to exist immortally. It is here the crux of belief in the idols and gods and goddesses lie. The great holy traditions try to teach us and inspire us this illusion as if it is truth, through images of omniscience, eternity and immortality. These images do inspire us to elevate our consciousness from the finite physical world to all that is everlasting and present in creation. But it only inspires. But unless we perspire in the path, the elevation of consciousness does not occur. Without any such perspiration, even when we do have such moments of elevation of consciousness, the habituated mind seeks solace in the rites and rituals of the gods and goddesses. That is why many who pursue the path also tend to continue their old practices of prayer. And that is what master was lamenting about in this quotation that we are discussing. While the oneness of being is experienced by us, we have been hearing our traditional thinkers tending to explain away the physical plane of manyness as an illusion. The illusion, it is explained, is in the seeming separation between one another. However, it is undeniable that both the experience of the many and the oneness that is experienced are there. It is necessary to understand the infinity in terms of polarity, with a beginning and an end. It is everywhere and nowhere. It is all and simultaneously nothing. We should realize that duality is integral to infinity, because aggressive and receptive principles are part of all creation. Energy moves because of these principles. That is why Master says Krodha and Kama cannot be totally eradicated. Obstacles in the context of spiritual growth are a person's intellectual, emotional or physical wheels or koshas that keep him away from evolving to a higher state of consciousness. Our purpose is to try and see ourselves as we are and remove the obstacles that keep us locked in self-centeredness. We need to understand that Prapannagati is an improvement over the Parabrahman, where we are still serving the individual self as an infinite self in glory and happiness that needs to be sacrificed at the feet of the Lord, so that we get dedicated in the real service of the Divine. Resignation is not the word here. It is dedication to the service of the Divine and realizing that it is something only He can fulfill. We delegate our capacities totally and leave ourselves at His disposal. Real surrender or prapanna demands that we surrender to all existence, even as Master stated. Oneness perceived should lead to serving the many perceived as one. Real surrender is surrender to all, and surrender to all means a service to all. Oneness is perceived even at the first knot, but the meaning is gained only when we cross the Parabrahman and enter Prapannagati, where we start serving all with a feeling of not just fraternity, but because of a perception of divinity everywhere. There are, then, no deliberations about whom to serve, or when to serve, or where to serve. Service is the mode of living, then. We may feel there is no scope to serve unless we are qualified in a particular profession to serve. But we can serve people in a much more subtle way than providing medical aid, food and shelter for the sick, hungry and homeless. By the grace of the Master, we have gained a perspective on life that has eased and enlightened our way, which we could pass on to others. The help we have to give may be sharing our spiritual understanding. We also serve when we are alone. In meditation we serve the whole creation by dedicating ourselves to expanding our consciousness. Whether alone or in a group, wherever we are and whatever we are doing, we are being of service when we meditate. The prapanna is always in a state similar to meditation and is a natural servant of the Divine and His creation. Sometimes, when we begin to serve with involvement, we get attached to how well the service goes. We do tend to worry about our service, and this is a fall from the state of prapanna, where our being a doer erases our performance. There is an ancient Sufi saying that states, trust in Allah, but tie up your camels. It means to take responsibility for our part and then leave it where it is. If the universe sees it fit to unleash the camels, well, who are we to think otherwise? It is true that milk and pickles may be opposites, This is true also when we reach the condition of prapanna, we naturally start serving him. But service brings in the capacity to serve and a mastery of its own. That is the origin of the prabhugati. How can prapanna and prabhu coexist? That is the point we realize when we come to the position of prapanna prabhu. Seers found it necessary to explore this duality, the pairs of opposites. Our lives for millennia have been spent in understanding good and evil, hot and cold, light and dark, science and spirituality. The great masters throughout time have brought to themselves the awareness of the light is the perfect union of krodha and kama, and we know that the origins of life are there. Any student of elementary science knows that when positive and negative vibes are brought together, there is a spark or light. Our master stresses the fact of our inner connectedness with infinite wisdom. Through his works and pranahuti, he leads us and inspires us to experience and understand and enable us to grow infinitely. The problem of worship of forms, which hinders our progress, is really tough to tackle. Master expressed his anguish that in spite of his labor, not much progress is to relieve sincere and devoted disciples from the grasp of forms of worship. But I think this problem is inherent in the nature of thought itself. Impedience of infinity is surely one that is formless. But we know every time there is a thought, there is a form. As a matter of fact, many of the educationalists believe that we should understand the thought from the form only, and the whole primary school education starts with pictures and forms of various objects and things. Form, it appears, is a must, because in understanding the finite, we come to know the infinite. The thought of numbers and their sequence is one of the preliminary ways of understanding infinity. Through impermanence during meditation, we learn that infinity is oneness with the master, and we have complete awareness in our entire mind, his presence. The very nature of our mind, as master puts it, leads us to this final conclusion, and it is the form of our mind which gets transformed from its gross form to the subtle and original that serves as the means for our awareness of infinity. But we get stuck with the attributes of the pure essence that the mind enables us to experience. We get impeded in our progress. I repeat, but if we get stuck with the attributes of the pure essence that the mind enables us to experience, we get impeded in our progress. This is a really slippery zone, and I had enough problems of crossing the attributive borders, attractive borders of the formless. This leap from the form to formless is the crux of overcoming the limitations of the manomaya kosha. Infinity is formless. How then can we comprehend infinity? We can never do that. It can only be experienced through expanded consciousness and expanded awareness. The surrender of our effort to comprehend or understand through intellect the nature of the infinite is an essential requirement, because knowing infinity is not in the realm of reason, but in the realm of impedience. Impedience, I make bold to say, is not possible unless a person is initiated. Initiated is not just introduction to the methods of meditational practices. The aspirant who moves in the path and comes to the level of consciousness where he or she fully realizes the interdependence with the master and accept the master in all respects alone gets initiated. An uninitiated person cannot see beyond his or her own vasanas or habits of mind, and finds anything other than his habits as impossible. We may think that once the people are initiated into the spiritual states of consciousness like the Parabrahman, there will be automatic awakening to the truth of their own being as a matter of natural progression. Unfortunately, it is not so. These spiritual states and statuses themselves produce a peculiar grossness which forms a center of identity. A person who really takes the milk, as Master puts it, and is saturated with it, may, because of his past habits or vasanas, feel that he or she is awakened, but when the experience fades into a memory, then the identity is in turmoil. This, the aspirant feels, creates the need to go deeper into the technique or to have more faith. This is presumed to be the solution to the problem that caused the experience to fade. The aspirant then starts thinking constantly about how he could maintain the impedance. Instead of total surrender to the divine, the aspirant resorts to taking steps compared to taking pickles by the master to remedy the situation, instead of growing into the states of consciousness offered by the divine. With respect to all such victims who get attached to the forms of the infinite, I may say that it is their inability to live up to the teaching of the master constantly and perfectly that is the problem. The problem of the aspirant, even master found it difficult to resolve. The entire problem is our attachment to form. We experience silence, but silence is not a form. The mind takes silence and starts converting it into an object and also starts evaluating it. Now we are not being silent. We started moving in our ideas about silence. We then have our theories of silence. And while we know nothing of it, we think we know. This inquiry is not into silence, it is into what we think about silence. When this is the case, we have missed and are lost in the mind. And this lapse into the mind from silence is the product of our unverified notions and beliefs. When we are fed with milk by the master, our mind gets obsessed with all these new impediments of the silence. In fact, the silence has been with us from the beginning. It is we who were not noticing it because of our fixations on how spiritual events should be and trying to find meaning for our silence in the language that we know. That is where the mind plays all its jokes, and we remain away from the blessings of the master, though he confers it beyond measure. Silence does not limit us. Being is not an object to be grasped. It is what we cannot be without. If we put the question, what remains in one moment of silence, and also give up the habit of self-inquiry and intellect, we get at the base of what is behind silence. That is reality, and that is the essence. I thank you for providing me an opportunity to share my thoughts on one of the most enigmatic sentences of the Master. Pranam.